Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver in Washington. Today on the program, Ashley Thompson and I visit a national park in Utah that seems otherworldly. It is dry and sandy and filled with huge, strange rock formations. Then we hear another American story. Barbara Klein narrates The Lady or the Tiger by Frank Stockton. But first, we go to Dan Friedel for a not-so-funny story about clowns in the United States.
Some Americans think it could be a joke, but people around the country are talking about a number of clown sightings. The first sighting took place a few months ago in South Carolina. People there reported seeing men wearing face paint and acting strangely. They told police the men were trying to get children to go into the woods. Whether it was a true story or just a prank, local media reported on the incident. News of the clown sighting spread quickly across the United States through social media websites like Facebook. Clowns are supposed to bring laughter and happiness to the people they meet. People made to look like clowns sometimes perform at birthday parties for children. But since the stories from South Carolina first appeared, many people are admitting they think clowns are creepy. They say clowns often act strangely and can even frighten others. Now, two businesses are reacting to the news. The fast food restaurant, McDonald's, announced recently that it would be limiting appearances by the clown, Ronald McDonald. Ronald McDonald represents the company both at public events and in television ads. He has been a part of McDonald's since the 1960s. The other company, Target, has almost 1,800 department stores nationwide. The company said on Monday its stores would remove the clown masks and costumes they have on sale for Halloween observances. Target made the decision based on the current environment related to clowns. McDonald's said it is reacting to the current climate around clown sightings in communities. Clowns and people acting like them have been around for thousands of years. Clowns performed for crowds at circuses in North America starting in the early 1900s. But they have also been used to frighten readers in scary stories. Psychologists have a name for a fear of clowns. They call it coulrophobia. Some news organizations are reporting stories of clown attacks. In New York City, a man in a clown costume chased a person out of a train station. In Oklahoma, police accused a clown of flattening a man as he walked his dog. School officials in Arizona blamed clown-related threats made on social media for a large number of students missing classes. three teenagers were arrested for their part in spreading a violent rumor. There have also been reports of possible copycat crimes. Individuals wearing clown masks robbed a bank and a restaurant. Other cities reported pranks pulled by people dressed as clowns. The clowns were stopping traffic in the Long Island region of New York. In Detroit, someone posted a video of a clown hanging off the back of a bus. Justin Kenlan likes to dress up as a clown named Stretcho. He is friendly. I'm sure that people still have a positive image of clowns, Kenlan said. I think it's important for children and adults to like clowns and to not fear clowns. But this year, happy clowns are not getting the attention. Police are not pleased with violent threats and pranks. They want it to stop. James Berlin is a police chief near Detroit, where two women dressed as clowns chased two teenage girls. This is going to lead to violence, Berlin said. Someone is going to get hurt over these antics, and it needs to stop now. I'm Dan Friedel.
This week, on our national parks journey, we travel to Utah. The western state is home to several of the most popular national parks in America. Today, we travel to the eastern part of the state. We visit a park filled with strange and beautiful colored rock formations. These formations have been created over millions of years. They curve and narrow and balance on top of one another. Some are extremely thin. Others have huge cracks, yet remain standing. Many of the rock formations seem to ignore the rules of gravity. Welcome to Arches National Park.
Arches are formations that look like half a circle standing up. Sometimes they create a curved bridge between two large rocks. Arches National Park contains the most natural rock arches of any place on Earth. The smallest arches are less than a meter across. The largest, called Landscape Arch, measures 93 meters from one base of the arch to the other. Water and ice, extreme temperatures, and many layers of salt underground created these rock formations over hundreds of millions of years. The huge amount of salt is the remains of an ancient sea. It covered the area around 300 million years ago. As time passed, the area filled with material left by rivers. Rocks buried the area. This created pressure on the underground salt bed.
Scientists say water is the most important element in creating arches. Water destroys the chemicals that keep rock particles together. The rock breaks as the water freezes and expands. Then the wind blows away the loose rock pieces. Erosion from wind and weather slowly removed layers of younger rock. Most of the layers of rock seen today are pinkish red in color. The rock is called Entrada Sandstone. Experts say that most arches seen in the park today developed within the past million years. But the land formations continue to change slowly over time.
But sometimes change happens quickly. In 2008, a formation called Wall Arch suddenly collapsed. Thousands of tons of sandstone crashed to the ground, creating a thunderous noise. Some formations within the park look as though the gentlest wind could send huge pieces of rock crashing to the ground. These are called balanced rocks. The most famous of all is simply called balanced rock. This sandstone rock is the size of 3 school buses. It sits on top of a tower of darker rock called mudstone. The formation is about 39 meters tall. One day, far in the future, balanced rock will no longer be balanced. Just as Wall Arch did, balanced rock will collapse.
The names of the rock formations give you information about their appearance or structure. The most famous arch within the park is named Delicate Arch. Delicate means easily broken or damaged, but it can also mean very carefully and beautifully made. Delicate Arch is a huge freestanding arch. It is 19 meters high and 13 meters wide. Of the 2,000 stone arches within the park, Delicate Arch has become a symbol of the state of Utah. It is among the most famous geological features in the world. Many of Arch's famous rock formations are easily seen from the single road that goes through the park. But Delicate Arch is not visible from a car. Some visitors choose to walk to 2 viewpoints. But even from the viewpoints, Delicate Arch is still more than 1 kilometer away. Many visitors choose to hike up to see the famous arch. The trail is 5 kilometers. It is the most popular hike in the park. The walk is difficult and steep. It offers no shade. The sun is extremely strong. In summer months, the temperature can rise to 40 degrees Celsius. Park officials tell hikers to take at least 2 liters of water with them. In winter months, ice and water can make the sandstone trail extremely slick.
Along the way, hikers pass a wall of ancient animal drawings created by the Ute Indians. These are called petroglyphs. Petroglyphs exist throughout the park. They are a reminder of the long human history in this harsh environment. Before reaching Delicate Arch, hikers must walk on a long and narrow rock ledge. The trail is often crowded with people, but most say the heat and crowds are worth it. Delicate Arch stands alone above a natural sandstone bowl. It rises up dramatically from the flat land that surrounds it. On one side of the arch, the sandstone gently twists. On the other, a severe crack cuts through the narrowing rock. Those who hike to its base appreciate and understand why it was once described as delicate. Most visitors to Arches National Park would agree that there is no other place quite like it in the world. It is quiet and dreamlike, unpredictable and violent, old yet ever-changing. A trip to Arches is like visiting another world.
And now, here is Barbara Klein with the American story, The Lady or the Tiger, by Frank Stockton.
Long ago, in a very olden time, there lived a powerful king. Some of his ideas were progressive, but others caused people to suffer. One of the king's ideas was a public arena as an agent of poetic justice. Crime was punished, or innocence was decided, by the result of chance. When a person was accused of a crime, his future would be judged in the public arena. All the people would gather in this building. The king sat high up on his ceremonial chair. He gave a sign. A door under him opened. The accused person stepped out into the arena. Directly opposite the king were two doors. They were side by side, exactly alike. The person on trial had to walk directly to these doors and open one of them. He could open whichever door he pleased. If the accused man opened one door, out came a hungry tiger, the fiercest in the land. The tiger immediately jumped on him and tore him to pieces as punishment for his guilt. The case of the suspect was thus decided. Iron bells rang sadly. Great cries went up from the paid mourners, and the people, with heads hanging low and sad hearts, slowly made their way home. They mourned greatly that one so young and fair, or so old and respected, should have died this way. But if the accused opened the other door, there came forth from it a woman, chosen especially for the person. To this lady he was immediately married in honor of his innocence. It was not a problem that he might already have a wife and family, or that he might have chosen to marry another woman. The king permitted nothing to interfere with his great method of punishment and reward. Another door opened under the king, and a clergyman, singers, dancers, and musicians joined the man and the lady. The marriage ceremony was quickly completed. Then the bells made cheerful noises. The people shouted happily. And the innocent man led the new wife to his home, following children who threw flowers on their path. This was the king's method of carrying out justice. Its fairness appeared perfect. The accused person could not know which door was hiding the lady. He opened either as he pleased, without knowing whether, in the next minute, he was to be killed or married. Sometimes the fierce animal came out of one door. Sometimes it came out of the other. This method was a popular one. When the people gathered together on one of the great trial days, they never knew whether they would see a bloody killing or a happy ending. So everyone was always interested. And the thinking part of the community would bring no charge of unfairness against this plan. Did not the accused person have the whole matter in his own hands? The king had a beautiful daughter, who was like him in many ways. He loved her above all humanity. The princess secretly loved a young man who was the best-looking and bravest in the land. But he was a commoner, not part of an important family. One day, the king discovered the relationship between his daughter and the young man. The man was immediately put in prison. A day was set for his trial in the king's public arena. This, of course, was an especially important event. Never before had a common subject been brave enough to love the daughter of the king. The king knew that the young man would be punished, even if he opened the right door. And the king would take pleasure in watching the series of events, which would judge whether or not the man had done wrong in loving the princess. The day of the trial arrived. From far and near, the people gathered in the arena and outside its walls. The king and his advisors were in their places opposite the two doors. All was ready. The sign was given. The door under the king opened, and the lover of the princess entered the arena. Tall, beautiful, and fair, his appearance was met with a sound of approval and tension. Half the people had not known so perfect a young man lived among them. No wonder the princess loved him. What a terrible thing for him to be there. As the young man entered the public arena, he turned to bend to the king. But he did not at all think of the great ruler. The young man's eyes instead were fixed on the princess, who sat to the right of her father. From the day it was decided that the sentence of her lover should be decided in the arena, she had thought of nothing but this event. The princess had more power, influence, and force of character than anyone who had ever before been interested in such a case. She had done what no other person had done. She had possessed herself of the secret of the doors. She knew behind which door stood the tiger and behind which waited the lady. Gold and the power of a woman's will had brought the secret to the princess. She also knew who the lady was. The lady was one of the loveliest in the kingdom. Now and then, the princess had seen her looking at and talking to the young man. The princess hated the woman behind that silent door. She hated her with all the intensity of the blood passed to her through long lines of cruel ancestors. Her lover turned to look at the princess. His eye met hers as she sat there, paler and whiter than anyone in the large ocean of tense faces around her. He saw that she knew behind which door waited the tiger and behind which stood the lady. He had expected her to know it. The only hope for the young man was based on the success of the princess in discovering this mystery. When he looked at her, he saw that she had been successful, as he knew she would succeed. Then his quick and tense look asked the question, "Which?" It was as clear to her as if he shouted it from where he stood. There was not time to be lost. The princess raised her hand and made a short, quick movement toward the right. No one but her lover saw it. Every eye but his was fixed on the man in the arena. He turned, and with a firm and quick step, he walked across the empty space. Every heart stopped beating. Every breath was held. Every eye was fixed upon that man. He went to the door on the right and opened it. Now, the point of the story is this. Did the tiger come out of that door, or did the lady? The more we think about this question, the harder it is to answer. It involves a study of the human heart. Think of it not as if the decision of the question depended upon yourself, but as if it depended upon that hot-blooded princess, her soul at a white heat under the fires of sadness and jealousy. She had lost him, but who should have him? How often in her waking hours and in her dreams had she started in wild terror and covered her face with her hands? She thought of her lover opening the door on the other side of which waited the sharp teeth of the tiger. But how much oftener had she seen him open the other door? How she had ground her teeth and torn her hair when she had seen his happy face as he opened the door of the lady. How her soul had burned in pain when she had seen him run to meet that woman, with her look of victory. When she had seen the two of them get married, and when she had seen them walk away together upon their path of flowers, followed by the happy shouts of the crowd, in which her one sad cry was lost. Would it not be better for him to die quickly and go to wait for her in that blessed place of the future? And yet, that tiger, those cries, that blood. Her decision had been shown quickly, but it had been made after days and nights of thought. She had known she would be asked, and she had decided what she would answer, and she had moved her hand to the right. The question of her decision is one not to be lightly considered. And it is not for me to set myself up as the one person able to answer it. And so I leave it with all of you. Which came out of the open door? The lady or the tiger?
I'm Katie Weaver. That's all the time we have for today, but we'll be back tomorrow with another Learning English program on the Voice of America.
It's music